Hello and welcome to the Practice Drill Podcast, episode 43. This week, we talk about the fallout from Origin 1 after an entertaining 16-10 win to the Queensland Maroons. Then we move on to the Super Rugby semi-finals, which kicks off this weekend. And then we provide an update on the NBA finals after Game 3 today. And then we finish off with our new round, the Quickfire Round. Shout out to Sencho for providing that killer intro, as always, and introducing just Blaze McKee today after what was a really fun Tuesday podcast about Origin 1.
Yeah, it was really good to have some guests on and hear some different opinions, and yeah, we might have to, I guess, keep continuing to do that in the future.
Yeah, no, that was really a lot of fun, but you know, I usually start off every podcast saying, you know, what have you enjoyed since the last time we spoke, but I'm going to guess it was Origin last night, a really entertaining game.
Yeah, it was really entertaining, and I think the game had quite a bit. You know, New South Wales looked like they were going to, I guess, get on top in the first 10 minutes and scored first, but then Queensland really dominated through the middle, and then there was a late comeback. So, yeah, really exciting game, and we'll get into it all in this podcast.
Well, guys, if you want to stay up to date on all things NRL, AFL, rugby union, cricket, and NBA basketball, go and follow us on Twitter at @T_practicedrill. But Blaze, as always, let's get straight into it. And as I said in the intro, we're starting off talking about Origin 1. It was last night, because we're recording here Thursday afternoon, with Queensland winning 16-10 to take a 1-0 lead, which is really crucial considering that, you know, the state that wins game one goes on to win over 70% of the time. So a really crucial win. But what even makes it more important, and you know, I think with Origin a lot is made of the past, but we've got to talk about the modern game. But in the past, over the 40 years of Origin being a series competition, only one team has ever come back and won the series after losing game one at home, which was the Blues in the 90s. So history kind of against your Blues.
Yeah, definitely. I think that game three, hopefully for the Blues, will be the decider now, and it's going to be pretty hard to go up to Suncorp. But, you know, I guess they'll be backing on their experience that they had up in Queensland last year. Obviously, they played and won up in North Queensland, not Suncorp last year. But I guess they'll be backing on that experience to, well, I guess first they've got to do a job in Perth and then worry about Queensland after that.
And so what were your key takeaways from last night's game? What impressed you the most from both sides?
Yeah, I thought from a New South Wales perspective, the back three played really well. I think some of the players that were maybe had some question marks coming into the game were pretty impressive. Daniel Tupou, I thought, coming out of trouble was really good. And Jack White was probably the best player, which I think he had a bit of chip on his shoulder. Obviously, there was a lot of media, and even on this podcast we spoke about, you know, should he be in the 14 position or should he even be on the extended squad and not playing. He was really impressive. Queensland, I thought, put a lot of pressure on Nathan Cleary. We spoke about Nathan Cleary being a key for New South Wales, and they didn't let him, you know, control the game through his kicking, which was really important for them.
Yeah, that was another point that we spoke about on Tuesday with our Origin 1 special podcast is, you know, at least from myself and Sean, the two Queenslanders, as we spoke about, just the pressure that needed to be put on Cleary. We know he's, you know, probably, and I guess arguably, the best kicker in the NRL. And, you know, when you don't put pressure on him, he's just allowed, you know, time to put it exactly where he needs it. And he just wasn't allowed that luxury last night. But for myself, for New South Wales, I thought the thing that they did the best is they kind of controlled field position for a majority of the game. Although there were times where Queensland kind of had the momentum, New South Wales, they did look panicked, but they were still able to make meters. And I think it was off the back of the man that you spoke about before, Daniel Tupou. I thought Brian Toto, although, you know, hasn't played many games this season due to injury, I thought he was back to kind of his 2021 form that I honestly haven't seen him do for Penrith this year. And I mean, you know, James Tedesco was phenomenal. Just his ability to pop up all the time was incredible. And I think almost brought New South Wales back into that game. I think if there's another, you know, couple minutes left, maybe even another tackle, arguably, and I'm sure we'll get into that soon, New South Wales could have leveled the game, and then who knows where it could have gone from there. But for my mighty Queensland Maroons, you know, they made me very proud. I'm sure they made the whole state proud up there in Queensland, but it was their resilience and defense. You know, the amount of times New South Wales, especially in that first half, had chance after chance, and Queensland were just able to hold them out. And I do think New South Wales also returned serve in that department, especially in the first half. But, you know, just such a young team, four debutants, and I think each of them played, you know, a crucial role and came up in really critical times. But we're going to have a look at some of the key moments, and I guess the first key moment happened in the first tackle of the game, and it was Josh Papali'i with the hit up. Isaiah Yeo kind of going a little bit low in the tackle. I think it might have been an elbow to the head, and he's hit the ground. And it was almost certain. Everyone was kind of the understanding, okay, wow, well, you know, Yeo's been arguably the best player in the NRL this year, and now he's going to have to go off for an HIA assessment, and it never came. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty crazy. You know, he obviously did stumble back to the defensive line, and you could tell, I think in that first set in particular, he didn't really have much idea where he was. Obviously, he recovered enough to continue playing. I think it was a bit ridiculous. To me, if someone stumbles, they've at least got to go off for a HIA. Whether he passes that or not, I guess, is another matter. But yeah, I think Cameron Munster spoke after saying, you know, there's a bit of a duty of care there. And I think, although, you know, State of Origin is a big, you know, big event, and obviously the players want to stay out there, there is a duty of care, particularly, you know, the medical staff and the New South Wales staff probably need to do a better job there and at least take him off for a HIA. If he can then pass the test, then you go, okay, he can come back on. But yeah, I think he probably should have been taken out of the game, and it probably did have an effect on him throughout. He obviously still tackled and carried through the middle, but he did a lot less ball playing than he has with the Panthers, and that maybe, you know, played a big role on the Blues struggling to, you know, break down that Queensland side.
Well, it wasn't even just his ball playing. It was just his his overall impact in the game was very limited. Like, I'm obviously a tragic Queensland fan, as I'm sure, you know, everyone on the podcast the other day, and especially you know. So I was more focused on Queensland throughout the game, but Yeo, like, it just didn't even really feel like he was out there at times. And maybe that had something to do with the head knock. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it was part of the game plan. I don't know why you wouldn't run through him. Like I said, he's been one of the best players in the league this year. But I think the main thing that's disappointing is that, you know, it's not up to New South Wales to pull him off. Like, why would you? I would expect the exact same at Queensland. It was more the NRL and with the independent doctor. And that's really baffling. We've seen people, you know, holding their ankle, you know, holding their, you know, privates actually in one round, and they had to go off for an HIA. You know, this guy's clearly been hit in the head. So for nothing to be done there was very interesting. But, you know, I wasn't up in arms about it because it's Origin. Like, I actually do want to see these players out there. But then I guess 13 minutes later, a crucial knock on from Valentine Holmes coming out of Queensland's red zone gave New South Wales their first chance to score. And it was the man who, you know, had a lot of question marks and probably a lot of controversy surrounding his selection in the centres, and it was Jack Whiten breaking his way through the Gagai and Cobbo tackle to get over. It was a really good, entertaining opening 10 minutes, but when he got over, it did seem like it was now going to be, all right, it might be on here, might be New South Wales about to run away. Was that a similar feeling that you were having?
Yeah, as you say, and early in the game, New South Wales did have quite a few chances, and I guess, as you say, Queensland did make a few errors. I think from the Queensland perspective, they would have been a little bit disappointed to let that try in. It was a little bit soft there on the edge, and I think they were interviewing Billy Slater just after, and he said they'd missed a few of their, you know, key defensive assignments, you know, one or two in, and then obviously it causes, you know, a pretty easy in the end try for Jack Whiten. But yeah, he was really impressive throughout the whole night, and I think you could tell he really wanted to prove his point and prove his spot in the team, and I think he did that.
No, there was a really good play there from Jack Whiten, who's been a standout for the Canberra Raiders all year. So he definitely deserved some role in the New South Wales side. And I think he really, you know, we've seen him definitely struggle in the centres for New South Wales. But that wasn't the case last night. Now, following that, the game seemed to tighten up. And it was about in the final 10 minutes of the half that a little break down the right-hand side from Selwyn Cobbo gave Queensland their second points with, on debut, and literally, I was blown away watching it. Just his ability to put a kick in like that on debut, and just how perfectly weighted it was, and Gagai to be right there and score in his 20th Origin. I mean, I think it goes down as probably the best try of the night.
Yeah, definitely, and it really came from nothing. I think Kalen Ponga did a really good job first up to recognise New South Wales were a little bit short on the short side, and he you know, jumped out from behind the ruck and created a 4-on-3 and stripped it really well. Gave Cobbo some room, and then, as you say, a lovely bit of touch to keep the ball in field, and then Valentine Holmes doing a really good job to support, and you know, that's a really important role when there's a line break made. You often need guys to support back on the inside, and he was able to finish. And that was a really important try for Queensland because New South Wales had just scored that try. We're getting a bit on top, and as you say, it came a bit from nothing. So it really, I guess, took some wind out of New South Wales' sails, and then obviously they also kicked the conversion, so it put them ahead going into the half.
Yeah, well, I think it was almost like a 20-minute gap between Whiten and Gagai's try, but it was that kind of, you know, at least from my point of view as a Queensland fan, it was like we are playing really well, like we're staying with them, but we can't go into the half scoreless. Like what that would do to their confidence, you know, no one really knows. So that was really crucial. That Gagai's try, but it was followed up pretty quickly by what was what looked like a try to Junior Paulo. I'll be honest, more than comfortable to admit it here on the podcast. I did leave the room following him putting the ball down. I had to go outside, take a breather, and I come back in and I see disallowed. I walk in exactly when, and this is, you know, showing how long I was outside of the room for. The no try coming up on the screen. So what did you make of that? A definite obstruction, or what did you think?
Yeah, it was an obstruction. I think the obstruction rule in NRL, it's obviously a little bit different to rugby union, and it's very black and white. And it's one of those rules, I think, whenever it gets blown up, the team that gets, you know, the try disallowed is always going to complain about it because sometimes it looks like, you know, he didn't have that much of an impact, but the nature of it is pretty black and white, and it was clear to see that it was an obstruction there. So, yeah, it was a little bit strange because when it's running live, you don't really see anything wrong. Obviously, when you see a replay straight away, you can see it's an obstruction. So that was a little bit disappointing, and again, it just helped, I guess, swing the momentum a little bit more into Queensland's favour and I guess, give them that confidence going into the half ahead.
Yeah, 1,000%. So did go into the break with just a narrow lead for Queensland, 6-4. A really entertaining first half that, you know, for me seemed like it, you know, went by in a blink of an eye. But coming out of the break, DCE goes to score out of a try, and this was one of the more controversial moments of the game that's kind of been a big talking point, at least today and last night in the media, is coming out of the scrum, there was a little bit of controversy as DCE cuts back off the right foot, goes to score under the post. But was Lindsay Collins deliberately holding Junior Paulo into the scrum? I want to hear your take.
To my thing, I think Lindsay Collins probably was holding him in, but I don't think it was anything that Paulo couldn't have got out of. I think New South Wales are going to be really disappointed when they see that try, just because I know from a scrum you would talk about what your defensive assignments are coming out of the scrum, and to let a halfback run through, obviously Tarek Sims overchased, and then I think Paulo's in the end just got to work a bit harder to get out of the scrum. Obviously they would have been holding, but they're going to be holding because they're front rowers, so they're binded onto each other, and I think he's just got to work a little bit harder to break out of that bind and make the tackle. Yeah, I didn't really see too much of an issue with it.
I'm glad that you say that, because the outpouring afterwards has been mind blowing for me, because as you said, they're binded in a scrum, and there is no way in the world that Queensland's play was, we're going to come out of the scrum, Lindsay Collins, you're going to hold him in, and then I'm going to step off the right boot and there'll be a clear gap. Because you would think everyone at the back of the scrum should be able to peel off and cover that. They were shaping to go up there. DC has played a little bit of eyes up footy, stepped off the right boot and gone straight through because he can see that there's a gap. And as you said, Sims has probably overran it a little bit. And also, Lindsay Collins wasn't even watching. and neither was Junior Paulo. I think Junior Paulo was as shocked as Lindsay Collins was that DC was about to run and put the ball down. So, to me, a huge nothing play, and that's going to be super controversial, but a huge nothing play. And I'm so happy that the bunker cleared it, because, you know, it's accidental, and there was no deliberate cheating involved. So we'll move on from that. And it was followed up shortly after by one of the greatest nut on chest passes, to shout out the Hallows Sport boys, from Kalen Ponga. Cutout ball to Valentine Holmes. And after Holmes converted it to give him a 16-4 lead with about 15 minutes to go. What did you think about Kalen Ponga? A little bit of a goosey up cutout ball, a little bit of face ball straight to Holmes. It was a wonderful try for Queensland.
Yeah, Ponga was really impressive. And that was probably a big difference for Queensland in the game, is they had, you know, those chances, and they were able to execute and execute them really well. And I think at this point, it actually, you know, I was a bit worried as a New South Wales fan. It did look like Queensland were kind of getting right on top, and it did seem like they were maybe going to blow them out a little bit. You could see their confidence is up, and guys like Ponga were involving themselves into the game really well. So, yeah, it was a really nice try, but it was also good for New South Wales to, I guess, have their little comeback, as I think a lot of Origin games do end up happening in the last 10 minutes. The team that's behind always makes it a pretty interesting finish.
Yeah, I was not confident at all. Like, I was going, okay, 16-4, like, it's a good score. They're going to have to chase the clock, but we can't stop trying to play. And I don't think Queensland did. But just knowing how dangerous some of those New South Wales players are, I just knew that this wasn't going to be easy. And James Tedesco is almost the master of comebacks. Just the way that he played in that final 15 minutes was really impressive. And I think he played a big role in setting up the field position for Cam Murray's try. Just a short ball from Luai to put him through the gap. And, you know, there's not really too much to analyze about that play, but it did give them, I think, about 9-8 minutes to score another one. And what were you thinking? 8 minutes left, were you thinking, all right, we're definitely going to send this to extra time? Or what were you thinking?
Yeah, you could definitely see, I think, that the pace of the game was starting to catch up to a lot of guys in the middle. New South Wales were throwing around a lot of offloads, and there was a lot more metres to be gained throughout the sets. And it did seem like New South Wales, you know, you talk about Teddy, their kind of outside backs were starting to get a little bit more involved and get some more opportunities. I did think New South Wales were going to score a late try there. It did almost seem inevitable, and they came really close, as you say, with that last play. But Queensland did really well, I think, to control the game, you know, in the last 10 minutes, slow the game down where they could and I guess hold New South Wales out, and then, you know, attack well enough to get the ball down the other end. And they didn't do anything too crazy, but they did enough to hold them out.
And that final play, yo, so close to the line, as you said, they came so close, and as he was kind of getting up off the ground, siren sounds, Ashley Klein calls full time. What did you think? Do you think he should have been allowed to play the ball and have one more play, or do you think that's game?
Again, I would say it was fine. I think that's just the nature of rugby league.
So saying it's fine as in that the call,
yeah,
that happened was right?
Yep. To blow up the game. Yep. I think that's just the nature of rugby league. The final play kind of rule, where as soon as the 80 minute goes up, it's game over, and it's always going to be like that, where the attacking team that's behind is always going to try to get up as quick as they can and claim that they could have played the ball. The defensive team is always going to lie on there a little bit longer and claim that the siren went. So that's one of those ones that seems to come up every year, but yeah, again, I didn't see much issue there.
Well, a wild game, just a 6-point win for Queensland. So look, I think for New South Wales, there's the potential for a lot of changes. I think the obvious one is, I guess, for them hoping that Latrell Mitchell is ready to go for game two. Are there any other changes that you think we'll see for either side?
I think it'll be the same sort of names that we've already considered. You know, maybe Josh Adokar coming back. I know we said Tupou was really impressive, but they might just look to make a change and bring in Adokar. Maybe Tarek Sims drops out. I don't know if you know, Frizzell or Trbojevic comes in there. But having said that, for New South Wales, I think you still need to trust the guys that you started with, and it was still a pretty close game. So it's going to be a really interesting balance of, yeah, backing the guys that you picked and you know, instilling some confidence there, and then making maybe a few changes that you really think are going to make an impact, because there's no point making changes for change's sake.
Yeah, I think they've got to do something a little bit different about that utility role in particular. That's the one that stands out for me. I mean, you know, Stephen Crichton, in my opinion, had a very ordinary game. I mean, you know, probably the play that everyone remembers him being involved in is the one where he turned the ball over because Cam Munster stripped it out of his hands. And then he also got put on report for a spear tackle on Cameron Munster. So, you know, it wasn't his night, and it was a very, you know, what if kind of selection by New South Wales. And look, it didn't work out. So I think they definitely need to pick Nicho Hynes. If not, I'd probably go with an Appy Coruscant. I'd probably try and take a leaf out of Queensland book and have those two hookers there. But that's their problem. And I think you're probably right. I think the Fox comes in for Tupou. I thought Tupou was good coming out of his own end, but otherwise, like, he's an aerial threat, and I think they might have kicked to him only once. So, and I think on the Queensland side, I think Coates doing syndesmosis injury, that'll probably rule him out, and it'll just be interesting to see, you know, whether they put in, whether they bring Oates into the squad or they go to Lungi, because he's been great for North Queensland. But let's move on to the next topic. Now, Super Rugby semi-finals kicks off this weekend, and two huge games. The first one, and what I believe is probably going to be the biggest one, Crusaders versus Chiefs, and then the Blues and the Brumbies. Come on, the Brumbies. What do you think of their odds? We'll start off with that game first.
Yeah, the Blues have been the real dominant side throughout the whole year. They finished on top and haven't lost a game since round two, but obviously, as Australian rugby fans, we want to see the Brumbies go in there and cause an upset. I think, you know, it's going to be a big task for them. Obviously, got to travel over to New Zealand and play at Eden Park, which is a bit of a fortress for, you know, New Zealand rugby and the Auckland Blues. So it's definitely going to be a big game for them. But, you know, they've got some big ins this week. Rob Valentini comes back into the side in the back row, and he's, you know, a real dynamic ball carrier and adds a real point of difference to the Brumbies side. So they're going to be hoping that he has a big game and that they can cause an upset.
And I guess in that first game, Crusaders-Chiefs, the highlighting factor of the whole thing is that the Crusaders have 10 All Blacks in their starting 15. It's a good percentage of top quality players. Do you think that makes them outright favourites to book a ticket to the grand final?
Yeah, I think they've got to be the favourites. I think everyone in Australia and New Zealand around the rugby circle knows the Crusaders franchise and how successful they are. And they really live for these big moments. And you know, they're one of those teams similar to, I guess, the Storm or the Roosters maybe. If they don't make a grand final, the season's probably considered a failure. So they're going to be going in there, you know, expecting to win. And you know, with all those All Blacks, I think that expectation's pretty fair. But the Chiefs, I guess, will, you know, be really getting up for the game. They've got to go down to Christchurch, which is also a tough trip in New Zealand. But you know, they came off a big win against the Waratahs in the quarterfinals, and yeah, they'll be putting everything on the line to make the final.
And I think you touched upon it, the Blues coming into this game against the Brumbies on a 13-game win streak, haven't lost since round two. It's so impressive, but how did the Brumbies overcome that incredible statistical feat that they've amassed throughout the year?
Yeah, the Blues are a really tough team to play against. They have a lot of exciting backs in particular. You know, Rico Ioane in the centres. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's been tearing it up. Mm. So I think those two names are probably the first two on the team list for the Brumbies that you're worried about. And if they can put some pressure on those guys in the midfield, then I guess you can limit the Blues' continuity, and they like to throw the ball around a little bit, you know, and those two are probably their main guys. So for the Brumbies, it's about shutting down that centre partnership. And then, I guess, on the attacking side of the ball, the Brumbies really need to get the ball into their big, you know, forwards' hands as much as possible. Spoke about Rob Valentini, but also, you know, Pete Simon and Darcy Swain in their forward pack are going to have to get through a lot of work and carry a lot for the Brumbies to do well.
But it's going to be difficult. I mean, we saw them fight back in the quarterfinals against the Hurricanes to get through to the semis, but what even makes it more difficult considering, you know, they have to kind of get out on the front foot. They can't come from behind against the Blues is that they also have to travel to New Zealand, which is always difficult. And it's a thing that's kind of been taken out of the NRL with, you know, the Warriors being based in Queensland. But with this competition, the travel is always, it always plays a really big part, and it's kind of an advantage, more of an advantage, sorry, to the home side.
Yeah, definitely. As you say, it's one of the unique, I guess, things about the Super Rugby that makes it so good, in my opinion. You know, you have these little extra difficulties, but I guess the motivation of a grand final and a potential, you know, Super Rugby title should be enough for the Brumbies to really get up for it. And you know, they do have a few guys with some family over there, so I'm sure they'll have plenty of support and hopefully they can come away with the chocolates.
Well, what's your predictions? What's the grand final that we're going to see come next weekend?
Yeah, the first game, I think, as we say, it's going to be hard to go past the Crusaders. I think they'll beat the Chiefs pretty comfortably. And in the second game, it's one of those ones. My head definitely says the Blues. They've been pretty incredible all year and play a really exciting brand. But my heart says the Brumbies. And you know what? We're an Australian podcast, so I'll back them in. I'll go Crusaders-Brumbies in the final. And hopefully the Brumbies can go all the way.
Look, I have a word to them because they train on campus where I live. So, yeah, I'll definitely have a word to them. You know, I'll tell them. McKee said good luck and he's back, John, and that should be enough to get the boys up for a big fight. But let's move on to topic number three. And the Celtics, they take a 2-1 series lead, as much as it hurts me to say. And it's not that I have too much against the Celtics because, you know, I don't really have a dog in this fight, but it's just... you know, as I said, I think before this final series started, I'm all about that history and I'm all about that, you know, that legacy that some of those Warriors players can make winning their fourth title. But the Celtics, they won game three today at home, their first of back-to-back games at home in this series. But it was really the Warriors who struggled defensively, and it was highlighted by three key performances from the Celtics, and that was Jaylen Brown, who jumped out to a huge 17 points at quarter time, finished with 27, which is really impressive. Jason Tatum kind of eased his way into the game, started off, you know, really struggling, and then finished with 26. And Marcus Smart, who was so reliable on both ends of the floor, obviously the defensive player of the year, and then 24 points that he finished with. And again, and he was kind of leading the charge with his defense in the fourth quarter alongside Robert Williams, who had three steals and four blocks, kind of the big difference, holding Golden State to just 11 points. Blaze, I'll ask you, are you concerned about the Warriors? You know, they lost game one on their home floor, and they're usually known for always winning game one of the series. That's definitely a point of emphasis for them that Steve Kerr has placed. They lost that. They were able to fight back in the second half of game two, and then today in Boston, they couldn't get it done and they find themselves down a game and home court advantage is now in favour of the Celtics.
Yeah, definitely a little bit worried. I think we both predicted the Warriors to come out champions, but the Celtics have, I think, proven, you know, throughout the whole playoff series that they, you know, they love a tough series. I think that Celtics, you know, Boston culture is really one that's built on toughness and winning away from home probably proves that. So I think, you know, they've beaten that home court advantage and now they've, you know, got themselves in a really good position to take out the series.
They definitely have. But I guess looking for the positives on the Warriors side of things is that Klay Thompson finally found his rhythm. He scored 25 and shot really nicely, I think, in the 40s for percentage from the field, 30s. From three. He does force a lot of shots. That's kind of what I'm taking away from his game. I think he's trying to force to find his rhythm, but you know, he definitely struggled in games one and two, so really good to see him score 25. And Steph, 31 points for the game, shot 50-50, 100 splits on the game, which is always really impressive, and he was pivotal. It was just the kind of foul trouble that they got themselves in. I think he had four or five. Draymond fouled out in the fourth, so you know, things just didn't fall their way, but I also think they shouldn't be relying on that because I think the Celtics are really strong. So now basically a must-win game in Game 4 for the Warriors, as history kind of tells us that going down 3-1 is almost impossible with the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers, led by LeBron James, against Golden State, are the only team to overcome that deficit in the NBA Finals. So I think saying Game 4 is crucial is a bit of an understatement. So where to now? What's your predictions for the rest of the series? Because by next week when we chat, there may be a chance that it could be all done.
Yeah, as I said, I'm a little bit worried about the Warriors. I've been really impressed by the Celtics. I know I said the Warriors would win just last week, but I think the Celtics have shown enough in these first three games to change my mind, and I think they'll take it out, but I do think it might go deep, so hopefully it's still going next time we talk.
Yeah, but well, many people are predicting a seven-game series. But yeah, as I said at the start, I wanted Golden State to win, but I do feel like this Celtics team is super, super dangerous. I think it'll be Golden State in seven. I think it's bound to go seven, and I think that'll be just so great for the 75th anniversary of the league to see an NBA Finals go the length. So good luck to both teams, but Celtics definitely on the front foot. But let's finish off here with the quick fire round. It's, you know, for people who are just listening, a new segment where we quickly talk about a few topics that we couldn't just cover in full and dedicate a lot of time to. So as always, Blaze, I'll start, and it's a tough first question. You know, put yourself in Mal Meninga's shoes. Following last night's performance, and it was a somewhat quiet performance from Nathan Cleary, are we certain that he should be picked over DCE when it comes to the Australian team and the World Cup later this year?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting question. I think Cleary's still probably the number one option. You know, you've got to take into account, I guess, his club form, and I'm sure he'll bounce back in Game 2 as well. But probably what last night showed is that there still is a bit of an argument to be had there, and DCE is definitely not giving up that jersey easily. And yeah, I think that's good for the Kangaroos, you know, to have competition in those key positions is only going to make them stronger. So I think Clear is still the number one contender, but I think DCE is, you know, still making a fight of it.
It was one hell of a matchup. What have you got for me?
So I guess continuing on rugby league, we'll look ahead to this week's NRL games. Do you see many of the State of Origin guys backing up? And I guess it's particularly important for the Cowboys guys who play on Friday night.
Yeah, look, had a look at the fantasy team just before we went live, and I do have Ruben Cotter in my team, and he has been named in the reserves, and the annoying thing is that could mean anything. But I do think that a lot of the New South Wales players will back up. I think they'll be keen to kind of move on from that loss as quickly as possible and try and back it up with a win in Clubland. But to answer your question, yeah, I do think a lot of them will back up. I think they'll be, you know, keen to get back into Clubland, as I said, and get that win. But I guess something that's kind of flown under the radar in sport, at least here in Australia, is, you know, the Aussie cricket team are currently playing a T20 series against Sri Lanka. And, you know, former captain of Australia, Steve Smith, was dismissed for just five. And I want to ask you, and it's definitely something that was spoken about when it was summertime, is it time for Australia to stop picking him in the shortest form of the game? Is it time to move on?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think Steve Smith's probably, you know, good enough to play in that side, and it's probably a question, I guess, for him just to consider whether playing all three formats is a bit too much. But I mean, obviously don't know Steve Smith personally, but from what we've seen of him, he loves cricket and wants to play as much as possible. So I think he probably will keep wanting to play T20 cricket, and I think if he wants to play, he'll probably get picked.
Nice, yeah.
And then we'll finish up with some AFL, which we haven't spoken about yet this podcast. Obviously, the Queen's Birthday matchup, a huge one between Collingwood and Melbourne at the MCG. Sure to be a huge crowd. Who do you think comes away with the chocolates in the huge game?
Well, yeah, it's the big freeze as well this weekend, isn't it? So that's going to be a really cool event. Look, Melbourne's struggling. Lost to probably the best team in the competition last weekend, which we haven't spoken about. Congratulations, Swans. To the Swans. I'm sure they're always listening. But yeah, I think Melbourne need to bounce back. Back-to-back losses, it's very unlike them. There was a point, especially early on in the season, where I thought, I don't think there's a single team in the AFL that can beat the Melbourne Demons. And they've lost back-to-back weeks, as I said. So I think they'll be keen to end that, and what an event to try and stop that, stop the bleeding, I guess. But a big game for Collingwood as well, because they do have, I guess, the privilege of playing in a couple of really big games, the Anzac Day clash and the Queen's Birthday, that, that gets a lot of views due to it being a public holiday. So I think they're going to be very keen to put on another good performance and against the top of the ladder Demons. But that will do us here for episode 43 of the Practice Drill podcast. A great episode, a lot about Origin, as I'm sure everyone enjoyed. But Blaze, I know I've asked you this before, but what are you looking forward to in the next week of sport?
Oh, I think it's pretty hard to go past the third T20 in Sri Lanka, isn't it? just kidding, didn't even really know that that series was going on, but I think you spoke about it, the AFL does it really well, the public holiday matchups, and as you say, Big Freeze, it's going to be a huge crowd at the MCG, and Collingwood versus Melbourne always have a great game, so I think that's going to be really something to look forward to on Monday.
Yeah, for me it's definitely the continuation of the NBA Finals, Game 4 I believe on Saturday, so you know, just really looking forward to seeing how the Warriors bounce back, and then from the Celtics' point of view, how they stop Golden State and go up 3-1 and basically put one hand on the trophy. But anyway, enjoy the next weekend of sport. We'll be back next week to dissect all of the NRL, AFL, rugby union, cricket, and NBA action. Until then, enjoy your sport, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.